Hello and welcome back to the Damage Report. I'm John Iadarola and I have got two special announcements. One, we're very lucky to be joined once again by contributor Rebel HQ, Wazi Lamer. Wazi, how's it going?
I'm fantastic. Very happy to be on back on the Damage Report, back with my family, the Dragon Squad. So shouts to all the dragons.
And we're glad to have you here. I'm sure everyone very excited. So that is the first surprise. We got Waz. And by the way, an awesome rundown. We're gonna have a little bit of fun. We're gonna talk about some serious stuff. We're gonna talk about some not so serious stuff. So normal day in the rundown. So that's all true. The other surprise though is that for a couple of weeks now, we had been asking you to vote for the Damage Report to win a Webby in the People's Voice Video News and Politics category. And it looks like some of you actually did, because we won the Webby. There you go. Thank you to everybody who voted for the Damage Report. We did end up winning. I'm gonna say with 99% of the vote, you know, if they wanna prove me wrong, they can release the ballots. But anyway, no, I think that we won and it's awesome. And thank you everybody. There's a lot of people obviously that do a lot of great work that goes into making the show possible on a daily basis. And it is great to have all of those contributions be recognized, whether it's those of us on screen, me and all of the many amazing co-hosts that we bring on, or the producers, publishers, editors, graphics. There's so many people who do so much, the people who are directing right now and TDing and all that. And so thank you for making sure that we got recognized in that way. We're gonna have to figure out our 5-word acceptance speech now. I think, was it Sophie that had the idea that involved a little bit of profanity? We're gonna workshop it and we'll get back to you. But anyway, aside from that, we do have a lot of news to talk about, which we're gonna launch into in just a sec. If you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream so people know we're live, that'd be great. And if you wanna contact us with super chats, tweets, anything like that, we'll respond as we go. But with all that said, Waz, you ready to do this thing?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm not, but we're gonna go ahead anyway, starting with this.
Having heard that Donald Trump about 2 hours ago, or an hour and a half ago, announced that he will not be going on Twitter. To me, that was the biggest part of the deal. That's what made Twitter so valuable compared to the old days, because Donald Trump was gonna come back. And I remember just my own experience and losing 50,000 followers when Trump, all the rest of it. But everybody lost 100,000.
Why do you think he said it?
Because he owns Truth Social.
Because he owns Truth Social. Because he's saying it won't be tweeting, it'll be truthing. And he's gonna, I don't know, you know, knowing him for so many years, I think he'll change his mind in 10 minutes.
He will.
But if he indeed sticks with this and stays off new Twitter won't be worth as much as I thought it would be.
Well, who cares though? Because many people believe if Trump hadn't been on Twitter so much, he would have been a little more of an effective president.
That is true. That is true. I think that this is bad news for Truth Social, because he's not going to be able to help himself.
Okay, so that is the five over at Fox responding to the big news of yesterday that happened, like seemingly moments after the Damage Report ended on Monday, was that we've been talking about the speculation that Twitter might be sold to Elon Musk, the richest idiot in the world. And indeed it was. And he did buy it for $44 billion. Yes, for $44 billion. You can own wholly Twitter and make it your own private thing. You arguably could also do more good in the world than like everyone else in the last century combined. So it's, you know, you do one of those two things with your $44 billion. You either become the greatest hero in the world in this millennia, or you lash out because a kid was tracking your flights on Twitter or whatever, or Ken Klippenstein made fun of you, and so you spend all that money on Twitter. So anyway, that's what he did. And we're gonna get into Fox's reaction to this, which is a lot less focused on Elon Musk than you might think. A lot of it is about Trump, but Waz, this has now happened. Twitter is now owned by Elon Musk. What do you make of it?
I realize that you're not a good liberal unless you pretend that this is the same as Hitler invading Poland. But for me,
no, it's worse.
The guy put up a ton of his own actual money. He put his money where his mouth is. He actually borrowed a bunch of money against his own stock in Tesla, which is his baby. And so all that means to me is that he's invested in not burning this to the ground, because he would lose money. He'd lose his ass on this if he did that. So I don't think, I'm putting money on not much changing about Twitter. It's not in his interest to do this, right? Like the only way he could have secured the loans that he did in order to complete this purchase was again putting up his own stock in Tesla, which tells me there's real money of his involved, which tells me he is not invested in doing something completely stupid and irrational here. So I don't know why I should care about this, why this is better than a bunch of private equity or hedge funds owning this and not just Elon. They all have the exact same incentives, which is make this thing profitable, keep people on it, keep people entertained by it. So I don't really care.
Yeah, I agree with you on some parts of that and not on others. I think that they have, in theory, some of the same financial incentives. I think that once you inject the fact that Elon Musk is one of the most immature, cringy, yes, tryhard humans fair. On the face of the earth, that's an added layer of personal incentives that yep. were absent in Twitter before because it was owned by so many different people. Yeah, and like I guess he certainly does seem to care about money. Arguably, he wouldn't care if he lost every single dollar here because he'd still be the wealthiest person in the world. So who knows? But I agree. And I honestly think that largely not that much probably will change. Although I would argue that that is in some ways a bad thing because Twitter is a place that has desperately needed some change. I do think that you're going to have more tolerance of open white supremacy, violent threats, misogyny, organized campaigns to run people of color off of Twitter, more open misinformation that'll get people killed, from things like the pandemic. There will be some stuff like that. And, Trump, I agree with Fox, will probably come back. But I don't think that Twitter is going to look wholly different than it did a couple of years ago. For one reason might be Elon Musk is a guy who took over Tesla. And then got bored with it and did a new thing in space and then got bored with it and did a flamethrower. And then he was gonna do hyperloops, but then he wasn't. And then he wanted to dig holes in the ground. And then he was gonna make a submarine for kids trapped in a cave. And then he was gonna make ventilators. And then he's gonna make a Starlink. And then he's gonna put chips in your head. And now it's Twitter. And next it'll be like, because everybody thinks, oh, he's just so diverse. No, he just gets really bored and moves on to things. Like, he could actually do stuff at Tesla. He doesn't care to. There's every reason to believe he's gonna get bored with Twitter in a couple of weeks. So maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. And along the way, there might be more ads placed on Twitter. Your data might be sold to massive data brokers. If they are pursuing profitability, there are some awful ways he can do it. But anyway, what do you think of that?
Yeah, again, here's the dirty secret about Twitter to people like who are like me. And I admit I'm addicted to Twitter. I'm obsessed with Twitter. It's my favorite social media platform by far. It's how I like to spend my day when I'm not working. But the dirty secret is that like nobody's on Twitter as compared to things like Facebook and Instagram, right? Like that's the thing. Like Twitter is only popular in so much as mass media integrates what people do on Twitter on mass media. But the amount of people that are actually on this thing is not that huge. It just feels influential because influential people use it as the platform of choice to spread their whatever. They could do stuff like go to a subscription model. They could do all kinds of different things to try to up their profit margins. But again, I don't think fundamentally anything is going to change about Twitter. And I think we overrate the importance of Twitter. Again, it's only important in so much as Donald Trump tweets from it. They put it on MSNBC. They put it on Saturday Night Live. They might put it on SportsCenter. They might put it on Fox News. And then it reaches a wider audience. But Twitter in and of itself is not this mass thing of communication. There's not that many people on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not wrong. Obviously, our fields are sort of overrepresented in it. I will say, like, I have mixed feelings about Twitter historically. There are things that I like about it. Honestly, when we're like, when Game of Thrones was really big and people were talking about Game of Thrones there, I liked it. When people are doing live commentary on debates and stuff, I kind of like that. For the most part, day to day, though, I'm on it. There's some people I follow. I occasionally see like a picture of, like a red panda or something I like. But yeah, honestly, If I could just ball it up and throw it in the sun, I probably would do that, honestly. As long as it's not
fine.
Exactly. As long as it's not in the sun, though, I'm sort of obligated by my career to be involved in it. But let's turn back to something that was said there. Fox is obviously very focused on the Twitter thing, not only in the video that we showed you earlier of the five going crazy about it, but Tucker Carlson says that Elon Musk buying it is a pivot point in our history. No, it's not. It's just really, really not. And on other shows on Fox, they're calling Elon Musk, Benjamin Franklin, and Einstein, and all of these things. Jesus, these people are so cringeworthy. But they really are focused on what immediate changes are we going to see? And in particular, are we going to see Donald Trump come back? Are we going to see Marjorie Greene come back? I would say the thing with Marjorie Greene doesn't matter at all. She's got her congressional account and she's using it to spread the same nonsense she would in her personal account. It doesn't even matter. Do you think that Trump will come back with Truth Social being a factor in this, that he owns a competitor to Twitter? What do you think?
100%. And I could use myself as my own example, right? I remember I used to love Snapchat when it first came out. Then Instagram completely stole their story ideas, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this is whack, Instagram with the bootleg story ideas. But then I posted my first story and saw that because I had more friends on Instagram, I quadrupled my views on stories. I said, the vanity just wouldn't let me go back to Snapchat. I'm sorry, like we're human beings. It's so obvious that this is gonna happen. Twitter is just way bigger, has way more users, is way more relevant than Truth Social is. And Donald Trump will want more people looking at his stuff than not. So of course he's gonna repatriate his material to Twitter. This seems so blatantly obvious to me. And this is not a human judgment. Again, I felt susceptible to it. I'm sorry, Snapchat, for selling out.
Yeah. Well, look, you just made a mistake, Waz. Because you just said that he's definitely going to come back. Well, look, he's already weighed in on this. And if I know one thing about Trump, it's that when he says one thing,
he does
not go back on it. He said, I hope Elon buys Twitter because he'll make improvement to it and he's a good man. But I am going to be staying on Truth. We're taking millions of people. And what we're finding is that the response on Truth is much better than being on Twitter. Twitter has bots and fake accounts and we're doing everything we can. The bottom line is no, Waz, I am not going back to Twitter. So first of all, on the bots and the fake accounts, they literally were displaying, Joe Rogan mocked them for this, his Twitter follower account as if that was his Truth Social follower account. They're just lying. And also I'm staying on Truth. Dude, you're not on Truth. He hasn't sent a Truth since before Truth went live. So he is in this weird middle ground where he has a financial interest in Truth Social. He obviously would prefer to be on Twitter. Mm-hmm. He's not gonna do Twitter because that would be a betrayal of Truth, but he's not on Truth either. He definitely wants to be back on Twitter though, I agree. I don't know if it takes 2 weeks or 2 months, but he desperately wants to be back on it.
Yeah, this is obvious. He had the most fun on Twitter. He could see like the immediate and obvious impact of his tweets in real time. Like he's sitting in front of his TV and he puts a tweet out and immediately he gets to be on Fox News. Immediately he gets to be on MSNBC. Immediately he's leading the New York Times front page on their webpage. It's obvious what the value is for Donald Trump of tweeting. And I don't see how he's gonna be able to back away from that.
Well, let's talk about some other people that might be experiencing a change here. Ron Watkins, who is running for Congress technically and might be Q, I guess. He said, as stated weeks ago, the Twitter deal is done, banned accounts will be restored. So he thinks he's gonna come back. That seems like just a guess at this point. But other people in the Q movement they're a little bit unsure exactly how to interpret this because they desperately want to be on these sites. They don't want to be banned. They want to spread their nonsense. They're just not satisfied unless they are randomly replying to everyone that they're a pedophile or something. But the issue is that, did you know that previously there had been a QAnon theories about Elon Musk that he was like the son of Satan? And part of it might have been some of them, oddly, thought it was weird that he was partying with Ghislaine Maxwell. And some of them who thought, well, pedophilia is the worst thing ever. And I do think that billionaires are all sleeping with kids. And I guess he's a billionaire and he's definitely partying with Ghislaine Maxwell. I guess I should dislike him. Most of them were able to just get past that. They had the perception he was a right winger, so they were fine with him. It doesn't matter who he's partying with. But some of them are not sure. And so they'll show you this image. They're like kind of going back and forth about him. Like, okay, he's trying to put chips in our brain, but he might put us back on Twitter, so maybe he's good anyway.
Yeah, anyway. Trying to follow the logic of the QAnon crew is a fool's errand that I wouldn't recommend to anybody. I'm talking about even our greatest physicists, scientists couldn't figure out what was going on with those cats. But yeah, the contradictions of QAnon, I mean, like we can go on forever with this stuff. But yeah, I love this idea that, you know, Elon is the king of the trolls, because right now he is. I feel like Trump used to be that. But right now it's Elon, because he does inspire just such irrational just fear and just like anxiety out of everybody, or just irrational confidence out of people. And so, you know, he's become this polarizing figure. I ultimately think this is a money play. I think he's gonna try to drive up the Twitter stock and just sell it again, honestly.
A big pump and dump.
Yeah, like this feels like just another Dogecoin for him. And you know, whatever, I hope he succeeds and, you know, him and the rest of the oligarchs can be happy again.
Yeah, I desperately want that too for them. Yeah, I think if you go back far enough, I think I like Tesla. I probably was fine with Elon Musk before he started talking constantly. Just make your dumb cars, you big idiot. Like, make a Tesla that you can sell for $20,000. Do that. And like, it's so overshadowed the work of so many engineers that, by the way, are not Elon Musk, that are actually making the cars and designing the rockets and everything. People miss that. They think he's like working with beakers in a lab or something. People are crazy. But sure, he's in charge of it, I guess. So just focus on that. Stop with the insane quest to be like the next YouTube influencer or whatever. Like, just be the guy that makes cars and rockets. But that's not enough. It's all about owning the libs.
That he was laughing. He was like being, I don't know if he was being serious or tongue in cheek about being a colonizer of Mars and all of this. I'm like, that sounds amazing. Do it.
Go.
Go ahead, y'all. Enjoy. Sayonara, suckers.
Yeah, and bring Bezos with you. Anyway, okay. Well, with that, we're gonna take our first break. We come back. We're gonna talk a little bit about the midterms. Will New York exist in a few months? We're gonna discuss all this and more, so don't go anywhere. Okay, everybody, let's jump into some news. Start with this.
I think we're gonna be in real trouble if we don't get up and deliver. Then I believe that Democrats are going to lose. Democrats win when they do what? When they work on behalf of working people. And we can't just rest on what we've already done. We need to be fighting going forward. But it's not enough. We've got less than 200 days until the election, and American families are hurting. Our job, while we are here in the majority, is to deliver on behalf of those families. And that means making government work for them. And there is so much that we can do, and so much, frankly, that is popular across the country among Democrats, Republicans, and independents. We can, for example, stop the price gouging. Let's authorize the FTC to investigate and prosecute on price gouging. That'll help bring down prices. Let's attack the corruption in Washington head on, so that we're actually saying members of Congress can't trade in stocks. Let's cancel student loan debt. President has the power to do that all by himself, and would touch the lives of tens of millions of people across this country. There is so much we can do, and if we do it over the next 200 days, we're going to be in fine shape. This is what democracy is about. Take it to the people what we've done, but we need to get the work done.
I think it's hilarious how disinterested that host was in everything that Elizabeth Warren was saying. She's like, can I just get to my question? Yeah. Deliver for the people. Sure, that sounds like a great idea. But anyway, that's Elizabeth Warren, who has identified something that everyone should be able to identify, which is the Democrats are gonna get absolutely demolished come the midterm elections, and they aren't doing anything to stop that from happening. They're barely even talking about the fact that it's going to happen or implying that something should be done. And so what Elizabeth Warren is doing there is what I feel like we're doing, like basically on a daily basis now, advocating for the Democrats to literally just do anything. It is this meme made into like a daily running political show. Just do something, like act like this is your career. Act like this is your passion. Is asking for too much? Ask like you care whether you get booted out of office, Waz. And she gave them a lot of suggestions of things they could work on. Maybe you have others, but it just like, but what is Biden doing? What is Harris doing? Democratic leadership in the Senate, in the House, are they acting like they understand what is coming later this year?
They don't really care, guys. Like this party is just the quote unquote leftward flank of Capitol. If the Republicans are the right side of it, the Dems are just the left side of the same exact coin. This is ideology. The only reason the Dems or Joe Biden, again, who literally with the wave of a pen, just like when the Fed guaranteed the bond market very early on in the pandemic so that Wall Street could be made whole, we didn't have Joe Manchin going on all of these shows talking about why this is messed up to give all this money to Wall Street. There was no hemming and hawing. It was the wave of a pen for the money class, for the financial class. Normal people who put themselves through debt so that they could firmly, you know, entrench themselves in the American middle class, or at least that was the promise to them by going to college and earning a degree, earning a graduate degree, MBA, what have you. Can't do that. We can't do that. We gotta have all of this debate. We gotta do all of this. Like Joe Biden could do this literally with the wave of a pen, and he won't, because ideologically they don't believe in that. They think these people should have to suffer and pay for their sins and pay for their decisions, but they don't feel that way about the money class. They never will. Those people can have welfare, they can have socialism, they can have a safety net, but normal people don't deserve it. They deserve to suffer. That's their ideology, John. There's no other way to look at this.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, as we were saying on the show yesterday, so many of them have some things around the edges that maybe they do, but like, oh, cinema got in the way, I couldn't do it or whatever. but for the most part, there's just no sense of urgency. Yeah. And we have given them great power and they feel no responsibility, let alone great responsibility to deliver. To give the audience an idea of what the Democrats are doing, I saw a breakdown. Some reporters that were talking to Joe Manchin. Joe Manchin was like, well, I think that we should raise the corporate tax up to 25% and the top marginal tax rate to 28%. So all of it would be raised to much lower than it was pre-Trump. But even that, Sinema's already said no. So Manchin knows that, he's met with her. So he's talking to reporters about tiny little pathetic half measures that he wants to do that can never pass. And Biden and like Chuck Schumer and all that, like as far as I have seen, they're not even engaging with this anymore because they have so thoroughly given up on anything being done. They're just letting Manchin and Sinema go out and just like pretend that there's negotiations and everything. And Joe Biden was effectively running for president in one form or another for longer than I've been alive, and he doesn't care to do a single thing. Yeah, he's sending some weapons to Ukraine. That's good. That's good. And hey, earlier today he announced his first pardons. Some of them okay, some of them fine. And I guess it's better than what Trump would have done. And I guess he didn't nuke anybody. So sweet.
I guess. I think the difference again, this is recent memory. Just watch whenever anybody even just said Donald Trump wasn't God. He killed them publicly. Like he just absolutely obliterated them on the bully pulpit, and he enlisted his friends to do the same and just absolutely murdered them publicly. Sinema and Manchin get out of line with stuff that Democrats allegedly really want to deliver for their constituencies, and it's crickets. Nobody gives Nobody gives a damn. Excuse me, I almost cursed. I know I'm not allowed to curse,
Marissa,
but nobody gives a damn. It just keeps going. You can compare and contrast. And I'm not saying everybody should behave like Trump. But again, Trump is willing to do this in service of his own ego and vanity. Mm-hmm. Ostensibly, the lives and livelihood of tens of millions of Americans are on the line, and Joe Biden is not willing to lift a finger, not even pillory his own party member for being a turncoat and a traitor.
Yeah, 100%. And what did we tell you was gonna happen, everybody? Yeah. Like way before, if Biden is the nominee, what did you say was gonna happen? No, like, I haven't gotten everything right. I didn't think Biden would even beat Trump. Of course, at that point, I didn't know there'd be a pandemic. So that, you know, things happen. So I haven't gotten everything right, but in terms of how they've tried to rule, I think we kind of nailed it, honestly. They would waste a bunch of time trying to be bipartisan, and that wouldn't really work. And they would count, like, they'd allow the moderates to effectively take over everything. There'd be no sense of urgency. And if they don't deliver, there will be consequences. Well, we are in the they're not delivering, there might well be consequences part of this. And we said it would happen. Now, some would say, oh, well, Biden's not doing anything, so that's why we should just let Trump get elected. Well, that's stupid as hell. Like, we're not playing that game. That's dumb. These are people's lives that are at stake. But we did say what Biden would do. We told you how the media would cover for him too. They're implying over and over that it's the left's fault somehow, that the reason people are turning on Biden is because Biden went too hard. He tried to be FDR 2.0 and people don't like it. He was just delivering to, it's literally what they're saying on CNN, MSNBC, that he's listening to AOC and Bernie, and that's why they're gonna lose. It is garbage.
By listening to them do what? What did he do? His most popular stuff was the actual checks they sent out. That's it. He has nothing, and that was Bernie and AOC stuff. What has he tangibly done that you could say, oh man, he was listening to Bernie on that one? Like, what are you talking about?
I have no idea. But what I do know is that there is a relatively easy path to not losing as badly. Honestly, at this point, I think that he could do quite a bit, and I'm not even 100% sure that it'd be enough to fix it, but he could certainly try. And as we've said, as Waz was just saying, with the wave of a pen, there's a lot you could do. In fact, you know, everybody watching this, you know, Dan from the internet, Jules used to be on the show. They run Good Morning Bad News. So I'm gonna be doing a video for them later this week about the different executive orders that Biden could pass. We could focus on the effects of one of them right now, though. So as Warren says, he could cancel debt. He could cancel 10,000, 50,000, all of it if he wanted to. Canceling 50,000, yeah, in particular, which he has not promised to do. He said he would do 10,000. Anyway, if he did 50, it would wipe out the entire burden for 36 million borrowers.
Jesus Christ.
If you were to do it for 10,000, it would wipe it out for 15. So less than half. It's still 15 million people though. So let's say, okay, we can't dare to dream of 50. Can you imagine for 15 million Americans turning on the news and finding out that crushing debt that had so stymied your life, your ability to choose. Maybe I want to move somewhere. Maybe I want to start a business. Maybe I want to like buy a house. Maybe I want to change my job, but I can't because I got to pay hundreds or $1,000 a month in student loan debt. That weight would suddenly be lifted off of you. And it should be. The debt never should have been there in the first place. All the right wingers who hate this conversation about student loan debt, just take it as a given that the way that the student loan debt industry has been constructed, the rising cost of education, all of that is just, that's a fact of physics. Nothing could have been done. There's no human decision there. And you chose to get those loans. You chose to do the thing we've told you you have to do, which is go to college. And so whatever you get, no matter how high it is, even if you spend decades and decades later paying it off, you owe more than you did at the beginning because of the high interest rates. That's still on you. That's how they interpret it. Think about how happy those people would be, how motivated they would be.
Yeah, and but of course, you know, these right wingers, they paid lip service to that bailout we gave Wall Street in 08, but give me a break. They were completely for it. Those were decisions they made out of greed. and fraud, right? And they still got made whole, no consequences, no repercussions. But nobody cries about that ever, ever, ever. When our overlords get bailed out and they get helped out, it's seen as just a given that of course you should do it. It's never about personal responsibility, bootstrap mentality. We never, and by the way, that bootstrap message is done. That's fallen on deaf ears. I don't know why they're still holding on to this. Like, this is 1982 when Ronald Reagan is in the White House. Like, it's over for that messaging. That's how you know they out of step with all of this, even on the right. But yeah, it's obvious that this would make Joe Biden more popular than not, right? Like, there would probably be some talking heads on the cable networks who would be like, oh, this is out of control. But normal people would be like, this is great. People shouldn't have to pay this much in student loan debt.
Yeah. And look, I see a couple of people in the chat, which I always see, was like, no, but like then like it could get overturned, or the Republicans could take over and they could reverse it.
No, they can't.
First of all, no, I don't think that they can. I mean, look, a judge could do whatever they want in theory.
Hold on, people need to remember repeal and replace. Remember all of that chatter?
Yeah, that's
true.
They
just couldn't do it. They couldn't take back the pre-existing conditions. They couldn't take back the stuff that people actually like. And guess what, guys? Republicans do go to college too. Way less nowadays. But they do go to college too. And trust me, they can't do this. They could not do this.
Yeah. And let them try. Let them campaign on that. Let them say, put us into office so we can give you your debt back. Let's do that. And look, I know I love you, but if you think don't do something that might be a conflict later, like you are preemptively, you're just saying that to defend the inactivity of Biden. That's what you're doing.
Like,
expect more.
They were in office 2 years. Power. They had all the power. They
all
could do whatever they want. They did nothing to Obamacare. They didn't do anything. They didn't take back any of the stuff. You know, keep your kids on until 26, pre-existing conditions. All the stuff that people actually loved about the system. They couldn't do it. They talked all of this talk, repeal and replace. They got the power. They were like, we can't take this stuff away from people. We'll get killed for it.
Yeah.
And so I don't think this is any different.
Okay, well, we're gonna mix it up. Holy, we're gonna give you a little bit of update on what's going on in Ukraine, or what might happen in the US, actually. Prepare for a pretty weird experience watching this.
У американцев таких ракет нет и никогда не было. Чем привлекателен Южный полюс?
А мы сразу знаем, куда ее запускать, да?
Ну, конечно.
Через Южный полюс, через Северный.
Нет, ну, речь идет...
У нас только одна цель.
Нет, речь идет, конечно, о территории, континентальной территории Соединенных Штатов.
Those are hosts on Russian state TV responding to the test of the RS-28 Sarmat Satan II intercontinental ballistic missile, which happened. It's a missile that you could fire to deliver a nuclear weapon anywhere in the world. And they thought it was hilarious to talk about sending it to the US, but not just generally anywhere in the US. They actually had a very specific idea of where they'd like to nuke. Take a look at this.
На секунду, эта ракета, если окажется там, где, в общем, она могла бы оказаться в худшем случае, способна уничтожить какого рода объекты, какие площади, территории?
Ну, я вам так скажу, что если 7,5 мегатонн будет доставлено на территорию, как говорится, нашего партнера, то...
Тут слово «партнер» очень важно.
Да, то такие объекты, как город Нью-Йорк. Хороший город, но его не будет. Вообще.
Одной ракеты,
конечно. Совсем. От слова совсем. Вот.
So, specifically, New York City has got to go. It could destroy it. And imagine if we were in New York. That's like their equivalent of CNN, effectively, of the media that is allowed by the Russian government. That's what it is. That's the equivalent of like Don Lemon and Anderson Cooper chuckling about destroying Moscow. Was that's where we're at this point in the conflict over Ukraine.
Yeah, I mean, I think what folks need to understand is that this is literally state-sponsored media. So if there's a projection of Russian military strength, You know what that is, right? Like, they're just trying to tell people we're strong and mighty. We could take out New York City if we wanted to, which again, you notice they don't talk about what the immediate response would be, which
what
is
would it be?
Total and certain death for anybody who was in any major Russian city. Like, you know, you guys could hit, you know, New York City, which, full disclosure, folks, my hometown. And so, you know, this charges me up a little bit. But like, the immediate response would be total, utter death and chaos and destruction in Russia. That's the part that they don't play. And you know what I was wondering, John, because a lot of people might not know this, but there's a lot of Russian people in New York City. Yeah. People from the Russian diaspora, particularly places like Brighton Beach. I wonder what they would think by seeing that that segment right there.
I actually looked it up. It is in New York City specifically 600,000.
Wow.
That's a lot of Russian deaths those Russian hosts are laughing about right there. That's like more than three of my hometown of Russians being nuked to oblivion. Anyway, look, everybody pretends that they don't understand. Like Trump was talking, you know, with Piers Morgan about like, if he says the word nuclear, we'll devastate. Like, no, but do you get it that we all die? Do you understand that like if they do it or if we do it or somebody else does it, we just basically all die and that's the end of everything. Why are the richest, most powerful people in the world the most like fickle with apocalypse? Like they don't worry about it at all. And honestly, out of all of these people, I blame those warmongering, bloodlusting state TV hosts, maybe the least, because they have to say that stuff or they could end up with like plutonium in their oatmeal. Also want to say, have we been doing it wrong, Waz? So we on our show, on a lot of these shows, you like sit at a desk, but they have this thing where their hosts like pace back and forth in this like command center with like this big wall of rockets going off. Is that like a power thing? I don't need to sit. I can discuss as I move around. Maybe you'll see the woman that we've had on the show before. Like some of them are at these standing podiums, like it's like one of the dirtiest debates ever. But she's just like pacing back and forth with her clipboard. I think it's supposed to give you the idea that she could launch a nuke at any moment. I don't know.
Yeah, it's basically, it reminds me when I'm watching NFL pregame shows, right? Then they walk up to the board and they show you how the defense is going and whatever. But then, you know, we get upset because we think it's crass when NFL compares itself to like military, like it's like a this is a blitz and this is a this and all of that. But like that's what they do on NFL pregame shows. But yeah, this is an NFL pregame show with actual nukes and actual rockets.
100%. Involved. 100%. By the way, someone in the chat's like, it wouldn't be plutonium, it'd be polonium. I'm like, yes, you're right. It would be polonium. God, come on. Doesn't matter. You get what I'm saying.
Either way,
I appreciate the fact check. But like, yeah. Come on, plutonium oatmeal is funnier. Can you give me that? It's funnier than polonium oatmeal. That's actually kind of funny too. Okay, we'll do a poll. Anyway, really fast. In addition to those state TV hosts, a Russian member of parliament talked about nuking England or New York, one or the other, just like casually was talking about. They didn't have the transcript, so we decided not to to play the actual thing. But bear in mind, we are not necessarily so much better, especially because those are state media hosts. Whereas you might recall back in 2016, Ted Cruz promised to find out if sand glows in the dark, threatening to nuke the Middle East. And he was also threatening to carpet bomb the Middle East as well, mass death. Trump was with his fire and fury, and I have a much bigger button. We are politicians. These are not just hosts. These are politicians joke constantly about annihilating hundreds of thousands or millions of people. And on both sides of this,
you don't
Russia
remember bomb, 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 Iran from the great Maverick, great American hero,
great Maverick.
John McCain. Come on, man. These people do this routinely.
Yeah, that's true. You're 100% right. I'm glad that you remembered that. And look, they're all joking. Now, Russia's foreign minister said earlier today that we could have nuclear war if we don't stop providing weapons to Ukraine. So that's fun. That's fun. I had been questioning as we keep doing these shipments, like at what point is Russia going to freak out about this? Well, no, they're freaking out about it. And they're saying, the Russian foreign minister said, we're in essence engaged in war with Russia already. That's great. And by the way, while all this anti-diplomacy is going on, bear in mind the siege of Mariupol. If we could jump ahead, there's a great breakdown if you want to go to the Washington Post about the historic scale of what's happening in Mariupol right now. They said effectively from sources on the ground, there's nothing to destroy anymore. This is like the carpet bombing or firebombing of a city in World War II, effectively. They've lost over 20,000 people. There are still something like 100,000 civilians there, some defenders, and God only knows how many will die in the end. So we have this looming specter of violence and everything, but there's also just the stuff that's actually going on, which is devastating enough in its own right. Now that said, we do have to jump to our second break. When we come back, Marjorie Greene made a claim on in court, immediately proven to be untrue. We'll give you the details after this. Okay, everybody. Apparently, Perry Mason badgers witnesses into confessing, I'm finding out. Okay, thank you. Nice. So Waz is a version of that. Okay, with that said, let's jump into some more news. A little update from something we talked about on Friday with this.
Prior to the inauguration in 2021, did you advocate for martial law with the President of the United States?
I don't recall ever discussing that.
Are you saying it didn't happen, or are you saying you don't call one way or the other?
I don't recall ever discussing that. Okay.
Did you discuss that topic, the idea that there should be martial law declared in the United States prior to the inauguration of President Biden?
Your Honor, I'm going to have to object. I actually represent the President of the United States, and that's covered by executive privilege. She can't get into this conversation.
Advocated for martial law to be imposed in a conversation with the Chief of Staff of the then President of the United States, Mr. Trump.
You can answer the question.
I don't recall.
Thank you.
Did you ever advocate for martial law prior to the inauguration of Mr. Biden with any member of the White House staff that was part of the Trump administration?
I don't recall.
So that was Marjorie Greene in court last Friday. Doesn't recall. And you know, why would you commit to memory something so irrelevant as whether you'd advocated for effectively the at least brief military takeover of the country to keep a president who lost election in office? Advocating for martial law, that's something you do casually as you're having breakfast or something. You're not going to remember that, Waz. Well, it turns out the reason she couldn't recall, which is not a denial, it's an evasion, is because, yes, she advocated for martial law, although she does have a defense. Martial law, as in M-A-R-T-I-A-L, martial as in having to do with the martial, like arts, the military. She didn't technically do that. But she did send this text to Mark Meadows 4 days before inauguration. In our private chat with only members, several are saying the only way to save our republic is for Trump to call for martial law. Like, you know, martial, like at Marshall's, where the only law is that you'll get a great bargain on whatever you buy. I don't know on those things. I just wanted you to tell him they stole this election. We all know they will destroy our country next. Please tell him to declassify as much as possible so we can go after Biden and everyone else. So that was on the 17th. That was 11 days after January 6th. So they tried their insurrection. They tried to stop the certification. Days before Biden is going to be sworn in, she's like, what can we do? Let's just take over. Let's send the military into the streets and stop the transfer of power. So you don't have to recall anymore, Marjorie Greene. We know exactly what you sent to Mark Meadows. Waz, what do you think?
You know, I thought it was weaselly. That's what I love about these people who throw stones and hide their hands. Like when it's actually time to have some skin in the game and let your voice actually be heard with some like, yo, I'll say this under oath. You know, I'll stand behind all of this stuff. They always duck and run. It's so cowardice. And you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene is no different. She's a fraud. It's a shame that people actually support this level of cowardice. Also, it's a shame that the quote unquote opposition can't beat this, can't convince people that this is a fraud and that they should follow something with more tangible benefits to their lives. That's really the shame of it all, is that a huckster like Marjorie Taylor Greene can just basically run this long grift and nobody will challenge her on the Democratic side. Yeah. Because they are so, they've been so wholly discredited in as far as the name of Democrats as hypocrites and useless empty suits that they can't even beat this. This beats 100%. Them, whoops them on a regular occasion.
Yeah, yeah. So look, I'm glad that we have the proof. And it was produced in time to potentially inform what the judge says. The judge's report is gonna come out possibly as late as Thursday. And then unfortunately it goes to Brad Raffensperger to decide whether she gets to run. So that's cool. I think she's gonna be fine. But I agree with Waz, like you can't make anything stick. And look, part of that is definitely Democratic incompetence and cowardice and aversion to conflict and all that. Part of it is the overall destruction of any faith in anything except what makes you feel good that the right has produced over the past few decades. Like, she called for martial law. You guys, like on the right, You talk constantly about conspiracy theories about martial law and one world government and all that. That was the thing that Clinton was gonna do or Obama was gonna do. Suddenly it's good, you don't mind it. Or why won't this stick, for instance? This is a text that has now been unveiled that Marjorie Greene sent to Meadows on January 6th, 2:28 p.m. Eastern time. She said, "Mark, I was just told there is an active shooter on the first floor of the Capitol. Please tell the president to calm people. This isn't the way to solve anything." Meadows didn't respond, which actually became a running thing. He wasn't really paying attention to her. But so Marjorie Greene, who is rightly terrified that at any moment she could be killed, is saying, tell the president, you have to calm people. This isn't the way. Now, what is implicit in that? That she thinks it is on him to do that, that they would listen to him, that they're his people, that this is something Trump was trying to do. She's saying it right there, Waz, and then immediately she's gonna change her tone entirely. In fact, less than 1 hour later, I'm gonna jump ahead to the at 3:52 p.m. So it's like 1 hour, 20 minutes or something. She texted Meadows, Mark, we don't think these attackers are our people. We think they are Antifa, dressed like Trump supporters. Why do you think that? Because it feels good to think that. And so Marjorie Greene fans will never see any of these text messages, but if they do, which they won't on Fox, they're not gonna cover any of this. They'll be like, yeah, no, they were Antifa. They were Antifa when they needed to be Antifa. They were a great special people when they needed to be those. Now that they're locked up, those Antifa, they're great patriots. Oh, and also she thought it was on Trump to get them to stop. But they won't, none of this matters. None of it will break through, Waz. They just believe whatever they need to believe. And it can change back and forth every second if it has to.
You know what this reminds me of, oddly? This reminds me of Russell Simmons selling Rush cards. Russell Simmons is from a neighborhood called Hollis, which is like adjacent to where I grew up in Queens Village. And so he had always been a hero of mine, taking hip hop mainstream, being the lion of the culture, et cetera, et cetera. Then he started selling Rush cards. And I was like, yo, Russell Simmons is exploiting our people, right? Like, he's no longer this hero, this great guy that I thought he was. Like, this guy is just another arch capitalist exploiting people with this, you know, predatory Rush card thing. This is no different. Oh, this is, but except these people remain in denial. Like, that would be like me saying, no, the Rush card is actually good financial planning for people. No, bro, like, these are your people. They're lunatics, and you guys have bred them to be this way, taking advantage of them in a vulnerable state. And this is what you get.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, we just gave you those texts, what these people were actually saying at the time. Not publicly, by the way. This is apparently their true thoughts. This is what they're sending to Meadows, and it doesn't matter. And you can add that to so many things that we've seen previously. Heads with the director, I'm gonna jump to this last big screenshot. So this is just a screenshot I took from an article on Yahoo News of all of the different people on the right that as it was happening, clearly knew that this was on Trump, that it was his fault because they were all sending him messages. Mick Mulvaney was saying, Mark, he needs to stop this now. Can I do anything to help? Ryan Spreba says, tell them to go home. Don Jr. says, this one you go to the mattresses on. They will try to F his entire legacy on this if it gets worse. William Tibbins, a representative, says the president needs to stop this. Meadows says we are doing it, which implies again that they know they should and that potentially they can. Representative Barry Loudermilk, it's really bad up here on the Hill. They've breached the Capitol. All of them are saying you've got to do something because it's on you. And then a couple of days go by and that's not on them anymore. It was Antifa when it needed to be, and now they're all patriots and we're all totally fine. It's all fine. It's whatever it needs to be. That's how politics works. Anyway, unfortunately, we are out of time for our first hour. Thank you everyone for listening. If you're on a platform where you can, Twitch and YouTube, we've got more coming. So don't go anywhere. Waz and I will be back after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.